Riviera Radio. Business.
Morning.
Good morning.
How are we today?
Very well, actually. Listen, I had an amazing weekend.
Did you?
My parents-in-law very kindly hired the Mr. Men House, which is a beautiful house from the founder of the Mr. Men, Roger Hargreaves, in Kent. And it was absolutely... Listen, it had the ingredients of just a wonderful weekend. Sun was shining, drinks were flowing, barbecue was sizzling, lovely heated swimming pool, jacuzzi there, kids were happy. Most importantly, it was, I guess, a chance for the grandparents to see their extended family before the rule of six comes in, which may be in place all the way until Christmas, of course. So we had a beautiful weekend, really one of the best I've had in such a long time.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear. Mm. And which particular football team are you supporting this season?
High-spending Chelsea, I think, is going to
really?
Be top of my list. But let's see how they play tonight.
Is little Henry happy about that?
He's not a massive football fan, to be honest with you. There's quite a lot of Chelsea players, children at his school, in his class and so forth. So I guess they'll be supporting Chelsea, so he'll probably go along with them.
OK, onto the markets. A bumpy ride last week, wasn't it?
Certainly a volatile week for equity markets as the declines in technology shares continued after that five-month rally came to somewhat of a dramatic halt. Perhaps that's pushing it a little bit too far. But the Nasdaq registered its worst week since March, now 11% lower than that September the 2nd record. Apple has been quite interesting. Apple shares have plunged 16% from its 10-day-old high. So a significant movement there, although should be seen in the context of the extraordinary gains that we've seen over the course of the past few months. Beyond tech, global stocks notched up the first back-to-back weekly declines since the start of the pandemic. Remember, that's the rally that added $7 trillion to US equity values. No doubt investors are nervous once again, looking at the path of the pandemic. How disruptive is that going to be to future economic activity? We've heard from the World Health Organization in the last couple of hours saying yesterday was a record one-day increase in infections. In fact, 308,000 people were infected over a 24-hour period led by India, the US and Brazil. So markets will be watching those numbers very carefully, although we should remember it's against the backdrop of medical gains that are happening at an unprecedented rate as the race to find a vaccine continues. And you've got this overwhelming support from policymakers, and that's trying to help balance out some of that sentiment. If you look at the opening calls on the European bourses, actually positive this morning. Currently calling FTSE up 18 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 72 points. CAC 40 in Paris up 33 points.
Yes, Christine Lagarde was laying down the gauntlets over the weekend, saying that Eurozone governments must keep spending heavily to keep unemployment down and bolster economic confidence.
Yeah, they have to. Unemployment in the Eurozone, less volatile, of course, than you see in the United States, but has been rising. I think, if memory serves me correctly, it's gone from 7.2% to 7.8%. We think it will head to just under 10% by the end of this year. Some governments have been extending their furlough programs. Germany is probably the classic example of that, but other ones are starting to unwind, and that's going to be, I think, reflected in terms of the labour market. The real step change, of course, for the Eurozone was the development of the European Recovery Fund, the mutual of debt. That reduces some of the fragmentation risks, I think, that you see within the Eurozone. But actually, that fiscal support is absolutely vital at the moment. Debt levels across Europe, of course, have been rising. That is a concern, but this is no time for policymakers to back down. They need to double down on that fiscal response. They need to boost the growth trajectory, and that's how they're going to overcome the long-term scarring of the pandemic and start to reduce some of those debt levels with growth.
Yeah, but soaring levels of debt as well. And we heard over the weekend the US budget deficit had soared to a record high of more than $3 trillion.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. Debt deficits have been absolutely skyrocketing. No real surprise given the scale of the fiscal response that we've been seeing. That's been absolutely unavoidable. The good news is, at least certainly in the short term, markets aren't too concerned about the servicing of that debt. You've got bond yields down at historically low levels, and in many cases, of course, in negative levels. And that, of course, is means servicing the debt is obviously certainly achievable, and helped, of course, by central banks who continue to be very accommodative through their asset purchase programs.
Okay, big deal in the tech sector going through.
Yes, US graphic chip specialist NVIDIA is paying $40 billion to acquire ARM from SoftBank. ARM, as we know, has led the way in the design of computer chips, licensing its technology to customers such as Intel, Qualcomm, and Samsung Electronics. 180 billion chips have been sold based on its technology. Remember, it's used in everything from smartphones all the way through to toasters. NVIDIA said it would retain Arm's UK headquarters, which exempts it from many US export control laws. The move will shake up the global chip industry. There will be some concerns, particularly from customers, particularly in the likes of Asia, China, South Korea have already outlined, or certainly some of the companies there have been outlining concerns and criticizing part of this deal and what it would mean in terms of concentration of power. But certainly looks like it has the go-ahead to continue.
Yeah, and we just get these bigger, massive tech companies developing. I mean, you know, Dominic Cummings wants to create a $1 trillion tech company in the UK, doesn't he?
They may want to, and listen, technology is the key. And part of the reason actually why US markets, of course, have consistently outperformed the European markets for a prolonged period of time is the development of technology companies they have there compared to the limited focus that you have in terms of UK and European markets.
And do you get on the Peloton exercise bike at all?
Listen, I wouldn't mind one, to be. They're very expensive. I wouldn't mind trying one, to be honest with you. I know quite a lot of people, some of the dads at the schools are into this, and it seems a little bit expensive so far for me.
But you can afford it.
Oh, come on.
You had a good year, didn't you?
It's not looking that good. Peloton said that they would cut, actually, the price of its bikes and screens to an average. But it still comes down at $1,900 for the systems. But they did say that would make it more accessible. But certainly doing very well as the lockdown closed gyms. Fitness industry embracing a technological solution. Leading that charge has been Peloton, offering remote workout classes. The firm's global membership hit 3.1 million at the end of June. It's more than doubled the year earlier. Revenue, of course, has been rising dramatically as well. Revenue surged 172% year on year, came in at $607 million. Really positive outlook statement coming through from them. So they expect the number of subscribers to exceed 2 million over the next 12 months. Revenue in the next financial year, they said, will be at least $3.5 billion. Shares were up on Friday on the back of the announcement there. They say people are using it. Perhaps unlike gyms, people are really using it. Average 24 sessions per month per subscriber. Quite incredible.
I don't like exercise bikes.
No?
No, get a sore bum.
These are different ones, though, aren't they? They're sort of cooler looking. Maybe you have the same issues, but these look different from what you're used to in the traditional exercise.
The saddles are so uncomfortable.
Okay, well, isn't that the same for a normal bike?
Well, you're going to need a padded saddle when you get to my age.
Well, you know, take some creams and get on with it.
Creams?
Well, you know, help yourself out.
Right, and another week of fraught negotiations on Brexit coming up. I mean, so we're all thinking, it's a mur, isn't it?
I hope we get through this interview without that. Yes, and it's the second reading of the Internal Markets Bill taking place today, and that's setting the backdrop for what is going to be somewhat of a battle, it has to be said, not only between the government and opposition partners, but a number of members of the government party, the Conservative Party, of course, coming out and saying that this is putting the UK in a very difficult position, that it's undermining the strength of the UK because they're not abiding by international law, and therefore the consequence of that means who can trust us in the future?
The Vienna Convention.
Go out and do a deal. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's going to be somewhat of a bitter political backdrop during the course of this week, which will muddy the waters of Brexit and means we're unlikely to get closer to that deal being agreed.
Do you think there's a big enough Conservative rebellion to see that bill defeated?
Probably not. Not as far as that. Some of the amendments it looks like could go through and some changes coming through. I mean, we've got such a healthy majority in terms of the UK Parliament. You'd really need to turn a lot of those MPs around in order to make that happen. But there is support for individual amendments which could dramatically change the way in which the bill looks.
It's not going to get an easy ride in the House of Lords either, is it?
No, we've heard from some prominent members in the House of Lords over the course of the past few days believing this is not the way in which the UK should be operating. It's not the best way to build trust with international partners. And again, they will try to do what they can to influence the way in which the bill looks as it goes through those individual stages.
Well, this whole thing about global Britain and striking trade deals, I see a trade deal was agreed in the court in principle.
It's a very big one with Japan, very big one.
Well, $1.5 billion over 15 years compared to $498 billion with the European Union.
Very exciting.
Come on.
Very exciting. No, listen, I think it's, what, 3% of UK exports go to Japan? It's a... Go on.
It'll amount to 0.07% of GDP over 15 years.
Okay, so it's a very low amount. Listen, we've said for many times, and there's no getting away from it, Europe is and will continue to be the UK's largest trading partner. As I said before, 43% of UK exports went into the European Union back in 2019. We need an agreement. We need this to work. And remember, Europe also needs the UK. So there's that's hope is that, of course, that self-interest on both sides will eventually start to shine through.
That's a very optimistic point of view.
Well, listen, it comes down to economic being pragmatic over the economic arguments. I've nearly got that wrong. Economic, being pragmatic over some of these economic views as opposed to thinking about sovereignty and politics and all these things.
Pragmatism over dogmatism.
Oh, that's how I should have said it. And that is why you earn the big bucks. That is why you earn the right to sit at that mic.
Foreign exchanges standing
absolutely
up, actually.
Brilliant. Pound against the dollar. Oh, you're back. You need to. Pound against the dollar coming in at 128. Euro dollar coming in at 118. Going to get 1 euro 8 cents for your British pound this morning.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day, sir.
Speak to you in the morning. Hank Potts and Barclays.